This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Welcome back to She Pivots. I'm Joe Piazza.
Welcome back to She Pivots. I'm your host, Emily Tisch Sussman. When I was planning this season, I wanted to make sure She Pivots was a means for building connections. I said during our season launch party that we're the generation of women who build bridges and don't tear each other down. And She Pivots is a way to empower women to look inward, define success for themselves and not by society's standards. And it's working. We're seeing a substantial change in the way women think about and talk about their lives and their careers. I'm so excited to dig deeper into these pivotal moments through these shorter, more conversational, candid convos this season. Let's jump right in. I am delighted to share today's episode with the Joe Piazza, best-selling author, fellow podcast creator and host, and an award-winning journalist. Her new book, The Sicilian Inheritance, is out everywhere, so be sure to go snag a copy wherever you get your books and snag a pic of you reading it. In this episode, we dive into what it takes to stay relevant in the influencer economy, how Jo's early experience as a tabloid writer established skills that now help her today, and actionable, easy ways women can support one another. Plus, we just generally have fun. Hope you enjoy. Do you know that chair in your bedroom? Yes, you do. We all have one. The one that was meant to be decorative? We all love the look, but in reality, it's become a catch-all for all the clothes we wear in constant rotation. The pieces are so intertwined into our daily lives that they seldom make it to the laundry basket, back to the closet, or to the dry cleaner. That is the category where duster lives. My friend Melissa Magsaysay looked to her Filipino heritage when searching for a piece that would address the void for the comfortable daily clothes that weren't quite athleisure wear. Traditionally, a duster is a simple and simple loose-fitting house dress worn by Filipino women while doing housework. But the look of work for women has changed, and I love that duster allows me to run from drop-off to meetings to interviews. While I may still lovingly toss it into the chair, it is truly the perfect item to simply experience life with my kids in. You can shop all their adorable styles at shopduster.com and follow them on Instagram at shopduster.
I am Joe Piazza, and I guess I have to call myself a media multi-hyphenate. These days, I run my own podcast production company. I'm the host and creator of the podcasts Under the Influence and Committed, and I'm the author of what is now being called the book of the summer, The Sicilian Inheritance.
Yes, it is. I'm so excited to find out if I am still literate by reading your book. I'm not 100% sure. It's been a while since I've actually read.
Yes.
But I'm thrilled to get into your book.
Okay, here is what people keep telling me, because I've been giving it to a lot of women who are in a reading slump, and they say it's an easy read, it's a fun read, but you also feel smarter when you finish it. And so a lot of people have told me Sicilian Inheritance has gotten them out of their reading slump, which is a nice compliment.
Like the highest of compliments.
The highest of compliments. I mean, I kind of like my publisher doesn't agree with anything that I say, but I'm like, could you actually put that as a quote on the front of the book?
Yeah.
The best book to get you out of your reading slump? Because I'm like, that's good advertising.
Yeah. What's possibly not good about that? Like, what's their pushback?
They're like, well, don't you want some famous author on the front? And I'm like, yeah, I love other famous authors. But also people want to know that this book is going to get them out of their reading slump. OK,
right. Exactly. It turns out that people are they want to know if they're going to read. Like they're actually
they want to know if they're going to read. Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to read it. So it sounds like actually a huge way to sell it to me.
All right, don't worry. When we get off, I'm going to make the ad and I'm just going to do it myself. OK.
I mean, isn't that what we're all doing these days? Like, we're all just DIYing it ourselves, like your book publishing.
We all do all the things all the time because we are women and we are the greatest multitaskers on the planet is what we are.
And I didn't realize how much of a multitasker I could be until I had 3 children.
No.
Like that just set me on another level of multitasking.
Mm-mm. I had no idea. I genuinely believe that having kids wakes up this part of your brain that is dormant sometimes, that is maybe dormant before you have kids. And it's almost a superpower. My ability to multitask is now a superpower.
Yeah, on another level.
Another level.
So I love your podcasts. I love your books. Like, I love everything you put out into the world. You've got a great article out right now. Like, I love everything that you put out into the world. And I think that we're in an age where, well, not I think, I know, we are in an age where media is redefining itself and what it means to be a publisher, a journalist, a host, like any of this. Like, we're reformatting all these jobs and how we make work out of it and how we define it. You are a journalist. Like, that is where you started. And you have been able to make this transition, I think, in a way that a lot of journalists have not been able to. So can you talk us through a little bit of that? Like, you started in, like, journalism, like the way that people of our age like are journalists.
Yes, totally. And I have a lot to say on this because I do sit down with young women or women in middle age who are looking to pivot their careers who ask me, oh my gosh, how do I become a writer? And my answer is there is no one path anymore. And there used to be one path. So when I started out, I went to journalism school. I wrote for the school paper. I interned at the New York Times. And then my first journalism job, which I don't talk about that much, is I wrote about municipal bonds for a newspaper called The Bond Buyer, perhaps the least sexy journalism job. And then I bounced to the most sexy journalism job, which is I was a gossip columnist for the New York Daily News, and then a staff writer and a columnist and an editor for the New York Daily News. I assumed I would be in magazines and newspapers for the rest of my life. Like, that's what I thought my trajectory was going to be. And then the internet came along and that industry started to both die and to pivot and to change and evolve. And I've been evolving my career now for the past 15 years. And, you know, I'd watched the editors before me have 20, 30, 40 year careers in print at one place. And that no longer exists anymore. So I did think, I'm like, okay, I'm going to embrace these new formats. I'm doing this, right? I'm doing social, I'm doing digital. And then podcasts came along and I was like, well, here we are. And now influencer media and having to make yourself a brand is where I think all writers and journalists are at. And though it is not something I enjoy, it is something I have embraced in order to be able to continue this career as a journalist and as an author. And so I think that the best advice I have for anyone right now is that you have to turn yourself into a brand and you have to be intensely nimble. And the journalists that I know that have left the industry, they didn't want to be nimble. They didn't want to leave the old ways behind. And I get it because it sucks and it's hard. And there are days when I am filled with constant anxiety. In fact, tomorrow's episode of the Under the Influence podcast is entitled, I'm Just a High Functioning Mess. But I did it and I'm happy I did it because I think it has prepared me for what is a very uncertain media future.
Yeah, I think it feels incredibly uncertain. Even I feel like podcasting as an industry is like turning over every 6 months. It's like the landscape is entirely changing every 6 months. I mean, I agree that I think the journalists who are doing well now are basically making their money off Substack because they have a big funnel to bring readers into it. And now everyone's doing a podcast to go along with it. But I actually think it's not sustainable. Like, I don't think it's sustainable for people to put so much of themselves out all the time. Like, you can't put all, I struggle with this. Like, there are some vulnerabilities and some insecurities that I have that I'm incredibly open about, like the fact that I had no identity after my political career entirely tanked. Mm-hmm. But there's some things like I'm still working through and I'm not comfortable talking about them. And I think that's true for everybody. But I think that if everybody's a brand and everyone's supposed to be like projecting their lived experience at all time, I just don't think that's sustainable. I don't think it's realistic. I don't think it's sustainable.
I think the two things you just said are not sustainable. One, I don't know how sustainable it is to do Substack and to keep creating more and more content when the world is just filled with so much content at this point. I can't even find things that I would like to read because there's just so much out there. And I also don't think everybody being a brand and everyone being a micro celebrity is sustainable. I know it's not sustainable for me. There's a lot that I talk about. I just wrote a Substack on my Over the Influence newsletter where I showed pictures of my butt in a bikini, my mom butt and my mom belly in a bathing suit, because I genuinely believe that moms are hungry for images of real human beings. And I'm very passionate about that. So I share about that. I share about my anxiety. I share about my family. But I'm running out of things to share.
No, I feel that. I feel like people are like, oh, well, I was just talking to Rebecca Minkoff the other day and she was like, oh, well, I'm starting on my Substack. I'm going to share like my morning routines and what I use. And I was like, well, she was like, you should do that too. And I was like, well, but I don't change anything. Like, that would be one really short column from me.
And kind of boring.
That's so the thing. Yeah,
I will say, it's so interesting because my morning routine newsletter is still like one of the biggest read ones that I did, which is so funny because my morning routine is chaos. Like, I don't get up and do a freaking skincare routine. Like, you were looking at me pretty much how I got out of bed, except I put on a jumpsuit and a furry vest because until Sicilian Inheritance comes out, I'm very committed to the mob wife aesthetic.
Oh, this has really worked out for you.
Yeah. No, it has. It's as if the mob wife aesthetic on TikTok happened just for me. Right?
Well, did you start it?
I didn't start it. I wish I had, but I still don't understand TikTok. Talking about embracing new mediums, that is something I'm confounded by. I try, but it hasn't worked out for me yet.
And you've been very helpful to me as I started this show and figuring out like how I format it, what phase I've gone through. And I so appreciate that. Like, I feel like the way that women now are helping one another, it is so the opposite of the narratives that we had heard we were entering the workforce about women being competitive and holding one another down. That's actually not the experience that I've had. Like, my experience has been women really helping me and not being competitive. And you have been incredibly helpful to me. So I just wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you. I mean, I think like one of our goals as women has to be to uplift other women and to help other women and to just be there as a support system. You know, I came up in newspapers, which were very male dominated, very misogynistic and patriarchal. And I had incredible mentors, Joanna Malloy, who wrote the Russian Malloy column, Colleen Curtis, who was our features editor. But I also had the worst boss of my life at that newspaper, who was vicious and abusive and competitive and mean. And I hate saying that because it's about another woman, but it does define what a certain generation of women learned in the workplace. And I think that we're unlearning that and trying to pass that on to the next generation.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And I think something that's helped me in this space is that podcasts actually aren't really competitive with one another.
No.
It's kind of only additive. Like, if someone likes your podcast and there's a similar one, then they'll probably like the other one too. And like, no one can listen to 20, no one can publish 20 hours of podcasts a week. So like,
no, I've tried. I've tried.
I feel like if anyone can do it, you're getting very close. So like, the audience is only additive. And I do feel like there is a little bit of a hanging on of the previous generation that feels that it should be competitive because everything else was competitive. But I do think for the most part, people are very generous with helping each other with stories, with guests, with cross promotion. Like I think that's why I like it. I like being in spaces that feel really positive. Like I think I spent so much of my career just trying to eat everyone else around me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you were in what I think is one of the worst spaces to be in. I mean, I covered politics for a while, too. And I worked at a little liberal experiment called Current TV.
Oh, yes, I recall Current TV. Wasn't that the Al Gore station?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I worked with Al and Gavin. This lineup is fucking bananas, okay? It was Al, Gavin Newsom, Elliot Spitzer.
Oh.
Yeah. After, by the way, I was one of the reporters that like helped to break his hooker scandal. And then I was like his digital news editor.
Wait, say more about breaking that story.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. I mean, that was a huge, huge story for us at the New York Daily News. And I was working on the gossip beat. I was also working on the political beat at the same time because that was when, you know, the lines between gossip and politics really started to get blurry. And frankly, our beat had the most access to people who could get us access to high-end escorts. And so we were really the ones that helped to get a lot of information about that story. And I don't think he was on such a power trip. I don't think he knew that I was one of those reporters. But yeah, so then I'm working at Current TV, like as his digital news editor. And it was just it was a bananas kind of beautiful and also just very male-dominated progressive experiment.
Mm. Yeah, there was a lot of that.
There was a lot of that. There was a lot of that. But yeah, I mean, politics is just it's nasty. You think celebrity, like gossip is nasty? The political world is nasty. And kudos to you for surviving it intact, girlfriend.
Well, some would say I survived it intact. I also just walked right out the door. So I don't think I really survived.
But I also walked right out the door of the New York Daily News. I like Jerry Maguire'd out of that shit.
So you moved to podcasting as an early podcaster. Committed was your first show, right?
Yeah, Committed. The guys from How Stuff Works approached me 7 years ago and said, hey, Piazza, you've written a lot of books. Do you want to turn any of them into a podcast? We're trying to make smarter podcasts. And I was like, yeah, totally. I've got this one about nuns. And they were like, maybe something else. And I'm like, OK, great. I've also got this one about interviewing people around the world about how to be married and how does marriage work? Because I got married as a 35-year-old potential spinster, and I'm so curious about how relationships work. And they're like, yes, that one. And so we created the Committed podcast, which was one of their biggest podcasts, one of iHeart's biggest podcasts for a very long time after iHeart acquired How Stuff Works. And it's a beautiful exploration of like real marriage and real relationships. And I'm very excited to bring it back. The first episode is actually about a couple where the guy suffered from porn addiction and how they got over that.
You really do find the stories. We're going to take a short break for some ads.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All that available at meaningfulbeauty.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Now back to the show. I mean, how do you come up with so many interesting and distinct ideas so rapidly? This has really been a point of fascination for me. Like, I've had one good idea here, right? Like, I've had one and I'm sticking with it. But like, in the couple of years that I've known you, every one of your ideas is so different. Like, she wants more, fascinating. Like, how do you come up with all these different ideas and then execute them at the same time?
I genuinely credit my early career as a tabloid daily newspaper writer for my intense idea generation, because you got to fill that newspaper. And if you don't have an idea, and if you are not constantly busting your ass every day and handing in that copy by 5 o'clock, then you're useless to them, right? And I was young and I was hungry. And so I've always had that work ethic. I think it's also why I don't get writer's block, because I'm like, if I got writer's block, you know, my drunken Australian British editor, whatever he was, going to like throw a mug of whiskey in my freaking head. Talk about toxic workplaces in the early 2000s. But I got excited about constantly having new and innovative ideas. My agents hate it. My agents fucking hate it, because they're like, my agents now actually don't hate it as much. My first agent despised it. She's like, you know, you don't really have a lane and it's hard to sell. And, you know, if you had a lane, then, you know, we could build an audience. And I'm like, I think if you create good shit, the audience is going to come. And I think that's true now more than ever. An audience is coming for you, not necessarily what type of thing you're making. But I will say The Sicilian Inheritance is a departure from the other books that I've written, which have been more contemporary fiction, you know, set in the modern day. And this is set in the modern day, but it also has a historical aspect and it's a thriller, which I've never written. And some publishing houses were real nervous. They're like, how do we market this? And I'm like, oh, as a book. That's how you do that. Yeah, it's a book written by someone who's already sold a lot of books. So I think it'll be okay.
Well, how do you, as you go through the marketing for every book that you've done, every podcast that you've done, like as you go through each of them, I find this more and more with publishing that and the same with podcasting, like no one's going to do this marketing for you. Like you have to do it on your own.
No.
And I agree with you that I think that people will come if it's interesting, but you do have to figure out how to appeal to a new audience if they don't know you yet. So how have you been thinking about that?
Hustle, hustle, hustle. And I mean, so much of marketing falls on content creators themselves these days. Little things from I'm trying to pitch stories that will appeal to a new audience. Sicilian Inheritance has some steamy sex scenes that are steamier than the things I've written before. So I just pitched a personal essay to New York Magazine about how do I write steamy sex scenes when my real sex life is super vanilla. And that's how I like it.
Incredible.
It is.
Please let us know when that will run.
I like boring sex and I'm not afraid to talk about it. Okay. And
opening the taboo of boring sex, right? And
opening, hey, just like making it acceptable to just like regular people sex. Okay. Just regular, just.
It's the next frontier.
You know, it is the next frontier. Actually, you know, they're like the most popular books on TikTok right now are all about like fairies having crazy wild sex, and you know, and like everyone should have all of the sex that they want to have. But you know, with polyamory so hot and fairy fucking so hot, you know, my missionary penis vagina sex is so boring for people.
Yeah.
I'm interviewing Molly Winter, who just wrote that book More about her polyamorous experience as a mom, I believe in Park Slope. And she's coming on Under the Influence, and we're dropping it into the She Wants More feed, actually.
That is a perfect crossover.
Totally, totally. I love a crossover. And I'm a marketing monster for Sicilian Inheritance right now. And I mean, to go back to the marketing.
Yeah.
I think we all have to be our own marketers. I've learned a lot from covering celebrities and now covering influencers about how we have to put ourselves out there. I've been covering the Kardashians since Kim was a freaking closet organizer who was begging us to cover her fake relationship with Nick Lachey. Okay. And I, in the beginning, no one took the Kardashians seriously. They left no money on the table. They would do everything and anything it took to get their brands out there. And I think authors have always thought they were a little precious for that.
Yeah.
And I'm not doing that anymore. I'm screaming from the rooftops, buy the freaking Sicilian inheritance. I've made flyers that I just put up around the neighborhood and like on the backs of bathroom doors. I will say it over and over again because we are being sold to all the time by things that are not nearly as good as our books or our podcast. Club Monaco emails me every day, and I haven't shopped at Club Monaco in 5 fucking years. So if Club Monaco can still email me every day, I can send a message out to my audience to be like, hey, buy this book that you're really going to like.
Yeah. Well, I think that's right. I feel like sometimes I do feel a little self-promotional, but I believe in the product. Like, I believe in what I'm putting out there. I believe that it's important. So then it feels okay for me to put it out there and make hard asks.
Totally. And, you know, I did used to feel self-promotional, and now I don't. Yeah. Because I think that we're so inundated with content all the time that someone has to see something about 20 times for it to sink in. And I want this book to sink in because I love it. And my goal is for it to become an instant New York Times bestseller. And I'm just putting that out into the universe.
We're manifesting it. We're putting it out.
We're manifesting things now.
It will happen. Exactly. I love it.
Yep.
I feel like I definitely see it on the pitch side of it, that like I get pitched so many books, and particularly people who are writing books like around pivoting and around women pivoting, because it's coming up much more now, like post-pandemic, which I love. Like, I love the category growing. For this podcast, it wouldn't make a ton of sense because it would sound really repetitive for me just to have more people on that say the same thing.
Truth. Totally. Yeah.
But in the vein of like rising tides, that like we're all helping one another. Like, I do try to find other ways to like anyone who's like putting a book out there, putting a podcast out there, putting speaking out there. So like, maybe we'll put it in our newsletter, or we'll put it on our social or something like that. Cause I know that it's hard to put yourself out there. And like, if someone is willing to make an ask to promote themselves, like I can just feel how vulnerable that is.
Yeah.
I want to give them something back.
100%.
Like, even if it doesn't fit what we're doing, like, I want to give them something back. You know?
You want to give them something. You know, it's so funny. I think about that in terms of book blurbing. You know, the whole process of getting other authors to, you know, say nice things about your book and then put it on your book. And it's so vulnerable and also such a weird ask. And as an author, you have to do most of it yourself. I blurb almost every book that comes my way. And if I don't have time to blurb, I'm like, send it to me. I'll promote it in some way. There are authors who just ignore you, or who say I'm on blurb hiatus, which is a weird fucking thing to say.
What a phrase.
But I get it that everyone is busy, but I'm intensely busy. I'm working 9 jobs. I think you find time for the literary community and to support other authors, especially women authors. So I'm with you. Like, just it's putting yourself out there is vulnerable. It sucks. I hate asking other authors for blurbs. I feel like someone just saw me naked, and the best ones are so kind about it. And there's some real assholes that are on my shit list.
That kind of stuff you don't forget. Like, when you are you're vulnerable and you put yourself out there. And it's like a major part of publishing a book now, right? Like, I feel like I hear this from authors that like, when you go to pitch a book, it's like you have to have an outline of the book, how big your social following is, and who will blurb it, right?
Totally, totally. I mean, it's huge. And the fact that you know, publishers do rely on a large social following bums me out so much, because I also know that social followings don't always translate to book sales. They can, but it's a lot of work to make it translate to book sales. Same with a Substack following. I mean, I have been offering free subscriptions to my Substack whenever anyone orders Sicilian Inheritance and sends me a receipt, but that audience wasn't automatically going to convert. I had to do something and step in there. And it's the same with social media. Just posting your book on your site isn't going to do anything now unless you're like really selling it. So I think it's short-sighted of publishers to buy books based off large social media.
Yeah, well, I think that's true of anyone who's trying to market anything right now. They're like, it's all short-sighted. I mean, as the landscape is evolving, you cover this so much in Under the Influence, your podcast about women who are social media influencers, and you're going through it yourself. Like, where we are right now, what do you think converts? Like, we're so bombarded with direct to consumer, whether it's, you know, user generated content or companies that are direct to consumer. Like, what does actually convert now?
I mean, I think that genuine recommendations from people that you have an actual relationship with and trust, they do work. I mean, I take book recommendations from other authors that I follow that I really like. I take makeup recommendations mostly from my friends, not really from influencers, although there are things. I follow some influencers that do like toddler food. Jenny Mollen, who is great and one of my favorite writers and is also going to do my Sicilian inheritance launch at Books Are Magic with me. She had an Instagram about toddler food for a while and I would just make it for my kids, right? But I think that you need like a real connection to someone and have to like really like them as a human being to take their recommendations these days. And we're seeing influencer marketing shift to be that people take recommendations from more micro influencers than people with, say, 8.5 million followers.
Oh, well, that really bodes well for me then, because I am could not be more micro. In fact, I'm still private.
Right. Well, and, you know, I mean, I would also like I would love to be private. But the biggest marketing for my book is now happening on my social media accounts. And so I can't be private. I can't be. But I do know for a fact that being on social media more, which I am leading up to the book launch, I'm more and more depressed and more anxious. And I would love to not be on it.
Yeah. Say more about that.
Oh, I think we know that social media is addicting. We know that it's making the brain release serotonin and all kinds of chemicals that drugs do. And so even just being on it and scrolling when you stop will like leave you feeling a little bit lower. For me, I follow so many other authors and it does feel, if you're very confident in yourself, feels like a comparison game, which sucks. You know, I want other authors to succeed, but because we're human beings with egos, you know, you see someone hitting a bestseller list or you see someone getting chosen as an indie next pick or a book of the month. And if that doesn't happen for your book, you feel bad about yourself and then you feel bad all day long. And all of that information was not available in real time to us before. And I don't think we need to be seeing it in real time. I think it is generally bad for us. So yeah, I'm definitely more anxious and more depressed. And I'm also not going to get off until, you know, the end of April after this book has made its debut into the world.
Yeah, well, I am sorry that it makes you more depressed, but you are one of my favorite people to follow. And I think it's because of that honesty that like you're putting it out there. Like I think the comparison got really old for me of like the perfect looking influencers. Like now I want to see people who just feel chaotic like I feel chaotic.
Totally, totally, exactly. And you know, the thing is I love posting. Like I really do, because I like sharing parts of my life. I like sharing the chaos in my house, the fact that I'm staring at my bed right now because my podcast studio is in my bedroom. I have like a, you know, like lovely like echo chamber in here, but it's an alcove in my bedroom and my bed is unmade because I had a 4-year-old sleeping in it last night with an earache and just, you know, got out of bed and came over here. So yeah, like that is real life and the messiness of life. And I do like those parts of social media. I think that there is also a lot on there that we don't need to see.
I have so much to say about that. Okay, let me think more about it. But I want to talk about your media company. We're going to take a short break for some ads.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melanin Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Now back to the show. This is a big deal. Like, launching your own media company is a big deal. So tell, how did you come to it? How are you seeing the boundaries of it now? Like, world domination is obviously the goal. How are we going to get there?
World domination is always the goal, man. You know, it's so funny how I got here. And I got here because of a pivot. Let's bring it back to the fucking name of the show, man. I got here because I parted ways with my distribution and production company and started producing my podcasts on my own, started selling my podcasts on my own. And what I realized is, oh my God, I am a production company. Like, that's what came first. And the more I thought about it, I'm like, oh, if I were a man, I already would have announced that I am a production and media company. But as women, I think we believe, oh, we're just doing the work. We, you know, we're just putting in the work and getting it done. And I'm like, no, this is a production company. You make media on your own. You make podcasts on your own. You are creating a brand for yourself. You're a fucking media company. And so, yeah, influence media and still getting it up and running. I'm declaring myself the CEO of it. And that's what it is, because, you know, more and more we are self-publishing. Substack is a version of self-publishing. I make more money off of Substack than I do freelancing for magazines now. So now that is essentially my own website, my own magazine website. And going forward, you know, I work with traditional publishers. I've worked with every single traditional publishing house at this point because I've done so many books and co-authored books and stuff. And I love them, but I also think that book publishing is going to change. And so if there may be a world where I'm creating some of that content on my own as well. And I want to also be here for other women who want to amplify their voices and their stories. And so the next phase of this will be bringing in more female-centric podcasts and content.
There's literally nothing I love more on earth than female-centric
podcasts. I know, right? Exactly. But yeah, to your point, like, I feel like I'm trying to do also what the Kardashians would do. Like, the Kardashians would say they had a media company before they even had one, right? And so I'm like, yeah, just like put it out there. Own what the hell you're doing. Own your labor. Own your work. And I think as women, we have been taught not to do that.
Yeah, I went through a sort of similar evolution. And at the first podcast that I did, the political show, when I was still working in politics, I worked with a publishing company. And fortunately, you touched on this a little bit, but like, fortunately at that time, I had the foresight to know that I needed to own the intellectual property and that they wouldn't own it, which meant that I made financial trade-offs. Mm-hmm. That, like, we had to structure the way the money flowed differently because I couldn't get paid immediately, but I would own the intellectual property. And that relationship did not end particularly well. And it was only because I had the intellectual property that I was, and I needed them at the beginning. Like, I absolutely needed them for confidence.
Yeah.
But then when the relationship ended abruptly and I thought, oh my God, can I keep doing any of this on my own? I'm not sure that I can. I actually realized that I could. And it was only because I owned the show that I was able to continue on. And so when I started this show, I said, I'm not going to make a deal with anybody else. Like, I'm going to build it myself and we'll see where it goes. But like, it made me realize it was slower. Like, it was a slower build and I had to keep reordering the steps that I went in. But because I prioritized owning the show and the intellectual property myself, I was able to have more choices as we've been growing.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is advice that I give to other women all the time, too. And I feel like I can say this at this point in my career, because in addition to working with all of these publishing houses, I've worked with every media company that exists and a lot of them that don't exist anymore. RIP Yahoo. And I no longer, there are amazing people at these companies, but we can never trust a company. Okay. Like, we just can't. They are out for themselves. They're out to make money for themselves, and they will have amazing producers and editors and wonderful people you will stay in touch with for the rest of your life. But make sure you are always negotiating what is best for you, because the company is. And they may not be around. Half of the companies I've worked with are no longer around, but they still may weirdly own my IP, right? And so, like, we have to be putting ourselves first in all of these negotiations.
Yes, I love that. Okay, wait, tell me what you want us to know about the book.
Oh my God. All right, well, yes. The Sicilian Inheritance is the book of the summer. It is a book that will get you out of your reading slump. It's an adventure, first of all. It is dual timeline, a woman from the present day, a chef and a butcher named Sarah, who goes back to Sicily to maybe reclaim an inheritance and some land that has been left for her. And while she is there, she unravels the potential murder of her own great-grandmother, Serafina, who we learn about in the past timeline is just like a young girl who gets pregnant and married way too soon. And she is so ambitious and wants to break out of all of the molds of what a young woman in Sicily is. And the women of that village come together to help each other. Both of the stories are so juicy. It is filled with like amazing landscapes and food and not vanilla, but also not gross sex. And yeah, I mean, Sicilian Inheritance is the best book I've ever written. It's also loosely based on my own great-great-grandmother's murder in Sicily, and which the fun part, I mean, murder's not fun, but, you know, we've got a lot of true crime fans out there. After I finished the novel, I started reporting out the real life murder of my great great grandmother. And we're doing a true crime podcast that will also be coming out called, we may change the name. Right now it's called The Sicilian Inheritance, but I'm trying to solve the murder. I'm going back to Sicily in 2 weeks to finish solving it. And
really?
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think you're going to find in Sicily?
Well, we went last summer. I took three of my children and we lived in Sicily for part of the summer, and we found a ton of stuff. We went through a bunch of documents. We found her death record. There was a big, big bombshell in that death record. And now we're working with prosecutors to find the police reports and to go through land records. We found a lot of land disputes between her and other families. And there's just a lot of threads of how she was murdered in my family, because we're Italian Americans and we like to tell stories and also make shit up. And so some people think that she was murdered by the mafia. Some people think she was a witch and she was murdered because she was a witch. And
I'm going to put my money on witch.
I mean,
I feel like you're a descendant of a witch.
I am 100% a Sicilian witch. Okay. I mean, I think she was a witch. I don't know if that's why she was killed, but there is like a whole witch storyline in The Sicilian Inheritance, the book. And so, yeah, it's great. I think this is going to be, like I said, the book of the summer, and it's so fun and so personal. And yeah, I can't wait to get it in people's hands.
Jo, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I loved it.
Thanks for listening to this candid convo. Be sure to pick up a copy of The Sicilian Inheritance and tag Jo on Instagram so she can see it. You can find her at Jo Piazza Author. Talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to this candid convo episode of She Pivots. Check back in weekly for more conversations with inspiring women. To learn more about our guests, follow us on Instagram at She Pivots the Podcast. Leave us a rating and comment if you enjoyed this episode to help others learn about it. Talk to you next week. Special thanks to the She Pivots team, executive producer Emily Edovolosik, associate producer and social media connoisseur Hannah Cousins, research director Christine Dickison, events and logistics coordinator Madeline Sinovic, and audio editor and mixer Nina Pollack.
I endorse She Pivots.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.